Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. It's an oft-quoted statistic about college sexual assault that 1 in 5 young women are attacked on campus.
In the past several years, there's been a wave of attention to the problem, with colleges adjudicating more cases and the federal government threatening to withhold funding to schools that don't beef up their anti-violence efforts.
Even President Obama spoke out last year as the White House launched It's On Us, a campaign aimed at combating campus sexual assault.
We are going to organize campus by campus, city by city, state by state. This entire country is going to make sure that we understand what this is about and that we're going to put a stop to it.
Campus by campus, city by city. Well, to one prominent Boston attorney, that sounds a lot like a witch hunt. Harvey Silverglate is a criminal defense attorney and civil liberties lawyer. He's followed sweeping social issues on college campuses for decades. And in a recent Boston Globe op-ed, Silverglate calls the, quote, campus sexual assault panic one of the many runaway social epidemics in our nation's history. Basically, in Silverglate's view, it's the new Red Scare. It's a provocative assertion that's drawn powerful reaction from victims' advocates, and we'll hear from one in just a moment. But first, let's turn to Harvey Silverglate. He's the author of The Shadow University, The Betrayal of Liberty on America's Campuses. And there's a link to his Globe op-ed on college sexual assault entitled The New Panic. We've got a link to it at radioboston.org. Harvey Silverglate, welcome back to the show.
Good to be on the show.
So first of all, let me ask you, you liken college sexual assault to a panic. You liken it to McCarthyism. You say that, quote, a national climate of suspicion that ferreted out very few actual security threats but ended up punishing many innocents, you know, vis-a-vis you're talking about the Red Scare there. But what specifically about college sexual assault likens it to McCarthyism, Harvey?
Well, I define a panic as a situation where there is an atmosphere that considers everybody accused to be guilty and then to be worthy of draconian punishment. And that is where we are right now in the campus sexual assault arena. There is no distinction made between an accusation and a conviction. I know many cases where I am convinced, and the evidence really proves it, that a young man is not guilty of sexual assault, but the campuses, so worried about incurring the wrath of the federal government, they are finding them guilty and throwing them out of school. Where there is no distinction made between guilt and innocence, I say there's something really wrong.
Mm. Well, you also, in your op-ed, I mean, there's a lot to dig into, and I want to do that, but in your op-ed, you also say, basically, you know, you say that there's very few actual legitimate cases here that colleges are dealing with, and that 1 in 5 statistic that we quoted at the top of this segment, you question the very legitimacy of that number.
Right. Well, that number is highly controversial, in part because of how it is you define a sexual assault. And, you know, the statistics in this range way across the horizon. But I would say that if there's really a problem, if 1 out of 20 were raped on a campus, it's a problem. The 1 out of 5 is just a result of the panic. But I'm prepared to concede that if any number of women on campus are raped, we've got a problem. However, the problem can only be cured by rational procedures and fair procedures where the guilty are punished and not the innocent.
Okay, so I hear you say that you accept that if any women are attacked, that there is a problem. Because I'm asking you about this because we were trying to ferret out, like, you know, really what is the most accurate number, if there is indeed one out there? And there are quite a few surveys that give us a range, as you were saying. Everything from the Department of Justice that I'm seeing, it says the rate of rape and sexual assault was 1.2 higher, times higher for non-students than students. But they also reported that students are far less likely to actually report cases to the police. And I also see a couple campus-based surveys, for example, at MIT and Princeton, that peg the sexual assault rate on their individual campuses at 1 in 6 women having been assaulted. So, and I'm pushing this because you seem to say that there's a hysteria around this, but there does seem to be evidence that there is a problem. So why call it a hysteria if there is indeed a problem?
You know, during the McCarthy era, which is what I mentioned in my Globe op-ed, there's no question that there was some communist espionage. There's no question there were some Americans who were quislings and who were working for the communists. There's no question there were some communists squirreled away in the government. But that didn't justify what McCarthy did. He began to accuse people who were obviously not communists. Their lives and their reputations were wrecked. And that was something that finally some people got the guts to push back on. Mm. Edward R. Murrow pushed back, President Eisenhower pushed back, and eventually the panic ended.
But are you really saying that the college tribunals, for example, or the Title IX commissions that colleges have set up are akin to the House Un-American Activities Committee?
That is what I'm saying, that they are as irresponsible in their accusations as the House Un-American Activities Committee.
But Harvey, let me just jump back in here, because I wonder, for this issue, call it campus sexual assault, couldn't the aggressive response that we're seeing on college campuses be an appropriate catching up of the system that you were interpreting as hysteria? Because, you know, for a long time, there wasn't even a public discussion about sexual assault on campus. And it's gone from virtually having no attention being put on it to being the center of attention. Some people might view that as hysteria. Others might view that as exactly the appropriate response that the system should take.
Well, as happens with alarming frequency, going from inadequate response and discussion to overcompensation is not the answer. And getting a large number of innocent men thrown out of college is not the solution to the campus sexual assault problem. I can tell you that one of the reasons this has happened is because on colleges today there is a toxic mixture of alcohol and drugs. And the alcohol and drugs are responsible for a lot. And mind you, I do this for a living. I mean, about a third of my law practice is involved with campus issues. And the combination of alcohol and drugs is responsible for a lot of the sex that goes on, where afterwards there are regrets. And so the statistics are very hard to credit, and they're very inaccurate because of this intervening problem of drugs and alcohol.
We're speaking with Harvey Silverglate. He's a Boston defense attorney and civil rights lawyer. His recent Boston Globe op-ed titled "The New Panic, Campus Sexual Assaults" has drawn a lot of attention because Harvey likens the way colleges are dealing with campus sexual assault to a new red scare. So listeners, what do you think? Have colleges overreached in their use of Title IX or tribunals when it comes to investigating and adjudicating college sexual assault? Or do you think they're not doing enough? Have you experienced this yourself in terms of having been a victim or perhaps an accused on college campuses? How should we deal with this problem best in a way that honors the rights both of the victims and of the accused? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Harvey, I want to get to some more of your points in just a minute, but if you'll stand by for a moment, I want to introduce another voice into this conversation. She's Colby Bruno. She's senior legal counsel of the Victims' Rights Law Center, and she joins us in the studio. Colby Bruno, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you.
So first of all, a lot to dig into, but I just want to get your first-line reaction to this very provocative analogy that Harvey Silverglate's making. He calls the tribunals on college campuses that look at sexual assault cases as basically akin to the the House Un-American Activities Committee as that bad.
Right. I mean, I think that is outrageous in, you know, in the worst sense of things. This is not McCarthyism. This is a serious epidemic on college campuses where women and men are being hurt by other students. This is not an overcompensation. This is not plucking innocent people out of oblivion. These are legitimate claims that someone has harmed someone else. And these college tribunals do this type of adjudication all the time. Their job is not to adjudicate whether or not someone is quote unquote guilty or quote unquote innocent. We're not in the criminal system. We're in a college disciplinary process where the rules of equity and parity apply. And that's Title IX.
Right. But I mean, Harvey Silverglate would say therein lies the problem, that there aren't the standards of the criminal justice system in these college tribunals.
You can't have those standards in these college tribunals because we have equity and parity in these college tribunals. The criminal justice system is anything but equitable and anything but doesn't have any parity for a victim. A victim isn't permitted in her own trial. A victim is merely a witness to the Commonwealth's case. A victim has privacy that gets obliterated when she brings it. Plus, the perpetrator of the assault doesn't even have to testify. How is that equality? There's no parity there. So you go to these tribunals and you say, Title IX requires us to be equitable. And we can be equitable because we get training. The federal government has checks and balances, which we don't have in the criminal system. There's no checks and balances on our DAs.
So let me just jump in here. because Harvey, I'm going to get your view in just a second. But it seems to me that there has been a lot of reporting about how these tribunals operate. And that depending on the story you read, they can be bad for everyone, both for the accused and the victims themselves. I mean, there was a report from NPR that came out of UMass Amherst, a case from UMass Amherst, where a student says he was accused of assault. And the hearing board, he said, was hostile and poorly trained. And the panel ruled against him and he was expelled. He basically said that there was a presumption of guilt even before he stepped before the tribunal.
Well, I think that when we're talking about these types of tribunals, we're talking about right now the federal government requires them to have basic training about sexual assault. Above everything, the presidents of these colleges are making these tribunals, these decision makers, also have training about what their policy says. And that was never before. I've been doing this for 11 years now, and I have exclusively college campus cases. And never before have we seen this type of equity, a straight down the middle shot that looks at the evidence, evaluates the evidence, and says, by a preponderance of the evidence, one of you is going to, quote unquote, win this.
Okay.
One of you is responsible or you're not responsible.
So, Harvey, what do you have to say to Colby Bruno's assertion that a college tribunal is actually a more equitable place to adjudicate these cases than a court of law?
With all due respect, I've been doing this for 47 years, not 11. And I have seen the deterioration of the campus adjudicative process. And I now take the position that if there is evidence of a real rape on campus, it should be turned over to the criminal justice system.
Harvey, what do you consider a real rape? Real rape is rape.
Is sex that one of the parties does not consent to.
Right, that's exactly and what I'm talking about.
Is the issue.
That is exactly and what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about misunderstandings. I'm talking about rape.
Let's hear what he has to say.
Yes, but the question of whether there was consent or whether there was a misunderstanding or there was coercion, that is a factual issue that the campus tribunals are notoriously unable to determine, and the criminal justice system does a much better job.
But does it really, Harvey? Because I was seeing that when it comes to even the percentage of such cases that prosecutors decide to bring to trial is what? You know, it's what?
20%?
8 to 37%, according to the Department of Justice? And that's even just those cases that a DA decides to put in front of a jury.
Yes, but your objection is not that the criminal justice system is unjust, but that they don't prosecute and convict everybody accused. If they did, we would be in a totalitarian country and not in a free society. Not everybody accused is guilty. So you can't test the criminal justice system by whether they convict everybody. That's circuitous thinking.
Mm. Colby Bruno, let me actually turn this back on you, because there was another case that really got a lot of attention. It was reported by the New York Times, and it was at Hobart and William Smith College. And a student says she was attacked by a group of football players. And the tribunal that she went before held hearings behind closed doors even before her rape kit results were completed. And those kit results eventually found evidence of forcible intercourse. Mm-hmm. Neither party was allowed a lawyer. The victim was questioned about campus reports and witness statements she'd never even seen. They didn't examine medical records that showed blunt force trauma. I mean, and in this case, the football players who she had accused were cleared. I mean, and this seems to be a case where the tribunal wasn't even good for the victim as well.
I'm not saying that the tribunals are good for everybody. What I'm saying is that sometimes they're bad for victims, sometimes they're bad for accused students, but at the base of it is equality at the very least. So neither person got a lawyer. Neither person was subjected to this stuff. Now, I'm not. The bottom line is, I don't support that. Okay, anytime there's a violation of Title IX, the Department of Education should hear about. The Office of Civil Rights should receive a complaint. That is the checks and balances on this system that we have that we don't have in a criminal justice system. Mm. And to even think that there is somehow equity or that somehow a victim is going to get a better shake with an uneducated jury, with people who are people who lack the basic training and basic knowledge that these campus tribunals decision makers are getting. You can't say that.
But an uneducated jury, I mean, it's a jury of our peers. It's what our criminal justice system is based on.
That's right, and they are no better than the decision makers that exist on our college campuses, except for the college campus decision makers get a baseline of training.
Okay, so there's another issue here that Harvey Silvergate brings up in his op-ed, and I want to get Harvey's take on it, and then your response, Colby. Because, Harvey, you also write that you think that, quote, college bureaucrats have taken to adjudicating felonies with a vengeance, those are your words, largely because they're afraid of losing federal funding.
That's correct.
Due to this Title IX. Explain to me why you say that.
The campuses have become unduly dependent on federal funds. I would bet that about over 98% of colleges and universities need desperately the federal money that they get. And the Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights, has threatened to defund them if they do not adhere to the federal bureaucrat standards for evidentiary rulings, for example. And so universities, which used to have a higher threshold of required proof before finding a man guilty, now it's virtually 50-50. If you can't believe either side, no side has more persuasive than the other, you can throw the guy out. Well, that is not an improvement in justice. That is a degradation of justice, and it's because of pressure from federal bureaucrats.
So, Colby, your response to that?
The federal government has never, ever, ever in the history of Title IX revoked anyone's federal funding.
But that's basically what they had been they're threatening now.
Yeah, but it's a threat. I get it. I mean, and, you know, you're a campus, and what you want to do is you want to do right by your students. When you're talking about Title IX, you're talking about a preponderance of the evidence standard, and that standard operationalizes a civil rights assumption, which is the basic equality of all people. All students on that campus have a basic fairness assumption, and that can swing either way. But that's the definition of preponderance of the evidence. Show me how you tip the scales one way.
And Harvey, on the other hand,
I tell you why no college has ever lost funding? Because no college has ever stood up to the federal government in this arena. Of course they haven't lost funding. They've collapsed.
Well, I'm also wondering, Harvey, why shouldn't the federal government use this tool? If indeed it does care, as President Obama said, I mean, they've launched a program saying we're going to do something about this, what he sees as a problem nationwide. Why shouldn't the federal government use the tools at its disposal?
The tool is an unjust tool. I am all in favor of government using just tools that produce accurate results. That is not what's going on, which is why I say this is a panic.
Okay. I want to get a sneak in at least one call here because we've got a bunch of people who are waiting for us. So let's go to Shelley, who's calling from Attleboro. You're on the air, Shelley.
Great. Thank you so much for taking my call. I want to caution Harvey here in how he's depicting this whole aspect of rape, because rape is not an issue of who said yes or somebody having regrets. It's about power and it's about assault. And people who've been assaulted and have been injured don't sit around and say, gee, I think I regret that. If we were talking about somebody being brutally beaten or somebody being robbed, the conversation would be different.
Right. Shelley, I'm sorry to cut you off, Shelley. Please forgive me. It's just that we've got less than 2 minutes to go in the show, and I appreciate your point. Harvey, you want to just give a quick response to that?
I am not in favor of rape. I am in favor of due process in determining when somebody has committed a rape.
And Colby Bruno, your response to that?
My response to that is due process has no place in these private schools. We're talking about Title IX. We're not talking about being a criminal defense attorney in a criminal context. We're talking about a civil justice system that has checks and balances, that requires you to remain in compliance with Title IX, and Title IX requires equity. This has nothing to do with due process.
Hmm. Well, there's a lot to dig into here, and we got part of the way there. There will be no final answers in a topic like this, so we'll come back to it again, I'm sure, in another program in the future. So for now, let me just thank Harvey Silverglate, Boston defense attorney and civil rights lawyer, author of The Shadow University, The Betrayal of Liberty on America's Campuses. His recent Boston Globe op-ed is titled The New Panic, Campus Sexual Assaults. There's a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Harvey, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
And Colby Bruno, senior legal counsel of the Victims Rights Law Center, thank you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Lisa Mullins.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.